The telephone rang, and it was probably the most momentous telephone call that I ever received. "Hello, Waitstill." I knew whose voice it was, the voice of my closest friend, Everett Baker. "Would you and Martha come over to talk with me at our house here?" "Yes." He said, "Waitstill, Martha, I am inviting you to undertake the first intervention against evil by the denomination to be started immediately overseas."
My husband and I felt that something should be done. Refugees in the Sudetenland had been murdered, and people had been imprisoned and hurt.
We had two small kids, including a very tiny daughter. I said, "How many men have you offered this to?" 17, he said. I said, "Do I understand they've all turned you down?" "Yes. They think a war is definitely coming and they don't want to be in danger." I reassured Martha, "Missionaries leave their children. I'm sure ours can be left in good hands. I want to go, but I won't go without you."
Waitstill Sharp, a Unitarian minister, as you heard, with a congregation in Massachusetts, living the life of an ordinary parish minister, and his wife Martha, who worked closely with him, as was expected in those days. Their children, a babe in arms and a little boy, a family, ordinary life, when that telephone call came. 17 people had been asked, and 17 people had said no. Martha and Waitstill, they said yes. They were told about that dire situation in Europe that few people in the United States and Canada were aware of yet. In Czechoslovakia, in particular, where there was a vibrant Unitarian congregation, help was needed. Well, as you know, they talked it over that night and decided that they would go and see what they could do to help. I'd like to give you a taste of one of their experiences. This story comes from UUA Tapestry of Faith program, and it was adapted with permission for the UU World magazine in the summer of 2006 by Michelle Bates Deacon. On a snowy night in Prague, in 1939, Martha Sharp jumped from a taxi and darted around a corner and flattened herself against the doorway. The heels of a pursuing Gestapo agent clicked past her. She entered an unlit apartment building, dashed up 5 flights of stairs, and rang the bell of a known anti-Nazi leader. 6 weeks earlier, Martha and her husband, the Reverend Wayne Waitstill Sharp, they had left their young children safely behind in the United States so that they can volunteer for a relief effort in Czechoslovakia, sponsored by the American Unitarian Association. And then one night in 1939, the Nazi army marched into Prague, the capital of Czechoslovakia, and occupied the city. The helping mission that the Sharps had agreed to do instantly changed into a treacherous cloak and dagger mission. That night, a woman opened the apartment door to Martha, denying that she had ever heard of the man that Martha was asking for. "I begged," said Martha, recounting the story later to a biographer. "I told her there was little time, literally hours. I produced my American passport. When she saw it, she said in Czech, 'A moment.' and then snatched my passport from me and shut the door in my face. For the next few minutes, Martha frantically worried whether she'd see her passport again. Her passport was her only ticket to safety. But the door did open, and this time a man stood before her. Martha asked if he was Mr. X, as Martha later referred to him when she told the story. He said he could give Mr. X a message. Well, she explained to this person that she had been charged by a group of British and American refugee workers with transporting him to the British embassy so he could be smuggled out of the country. The man asked her to wait for a moment, then disappeared into the apartment, closing the door. Martha waited. Then the door opened again, and he, Mr. X, wearing an overcoat, handed Martha her passport and said, "I am who you're looking for." Together they walked through the wind and snow across the city. A Nazi soldier stopped them when they reached the bridge over the Vltava River. Martha produced her passport and confidently announced, "Americans!" And they were waved across the bridge and then stopped by another soldier on the other side. And the passport trick worked again. But just steps before the British embassy, a third Gestapo officer stopped them. Martha began to loudly complain about the lack of taxis and her frustration at being late for a meeting with the embassy secretary. She flashed her passport and demanded the guard tell the secretary that Mr. and Mrs. Sharp are here. And he waved them through to the British guard. And Martha and Mr. X walked into the embassy to safety. Martha then returned to her apartment where her husband, Waitzel, was returning from a similar mission. And they watched out their window as Nazi soldiers looted Prague, the stores, and the warehouses. The rescue of Mr. X is one of hundreds that the couple orchestrated, helping Jews and non-Jews, intellectuals, political leaders, writers, artists, and children flee to safety from the Nazis. The Sharps were in Europe the first time for just less than 8 months, leaving their children in the care, as I said, of their church community. And then they were barely home 6 months when they were ordered to return, and this time to France. They resisted, especially Martha. She wanted to spend time with her children. And Waitzel, no less. But the situation was extreme, and they had experience and contacts already. So they were sent to France, and they were asked to get the people out that they had got out of Czechoslovakia into what they thought was the safety of France, that it was no longer safe out of France. When they arrived, the Nazis were on the verge of taking over France. And in fact, after a week of them being there, the Nazis did take over Paris. It was unthinkable, but it happened. And the Sharps continued with their mission. Once there and able to assess the situation, Martha decided to focus on the needs of children, organizing a trainload of milk powder into France, and then organizing boatloads of children from France out of Europe into the United States. This was a harrowing and dangerous situation, as you can well imagine. A parent placed in the position so dire that they had to ignore every natural instinct to hold the children close in times of crisis. And yet, for the sake of their future, that was so darkly bleak in Europe at the time, these parents, so many of them, had to open their arms and put their children on planes and boats and into the care of strangers, knowing that they may never see their children again. And Martha said that the sight of the fathers and the mothers smiling and waving farewell to the children was one of the most courageous sights she had ever experienced. Now, Martha and Wetzel Sharp, were ordinary people, but they became, through their actions, courageous and exceptional people. Of course, there were many, many who risked their family safety and their own lives to help those in dire circumstances. Good people. People who lived their values of human decency and the inherent respect and dignity that are only what people deserve. But we can't deny that the Sharps were exceptional people. Not everyone has either the opportunity nor the courage to do what they did over and over again. And yet, there's caution here. We must be gentle with our judgments and where they fall. We can and should judge the Sharps well. Hold them up in the bright, shining light with all the Unitarians who have committed themselves to the highest ideals of our principles in the most dangerous of times. But it is unfair to ourselves, perhaps even dangerous, if we compare ourselves and then negatively judge ourselves next to them. In times of war, people do extraordinary things. Some of you may very well know that. The situation pulls it from them, but in many cases, the groundwork for those exceptional moments was laid before. Martha and Wetzel had life experience that was already awakening them to the inequities of society. They were already working in areas of social justice. Martha was a trained social worker, much to her parents' displeasure, and had worked for a women's settlement program in Chicago, responsible for 500 girls from many nationalities before she met and married Wetzel. And Wetzel was a trained lawyer, but it was the love of service that drew him into the Unitarian ministry and married then his theology and principles with a keen interest in international affairs. In sharing his grandparents' experience, Artemis Joukowsky wanted their story to inspire others, not overwhelm them. He says, life is made of righteous moments, not grandiose moments. It's making choices where you reflect on how you treat everyone in your life. The key part about my grandparents, he said, wasn't just one big moment. They made thousands of little choices that led up to the story that we now tell. Inspired by his grandparents' story, Artemis went on to create with Ken Burns the documentary Defying the Nazis, The Sharps War, which is available, if you have it, on Netflix and also in DVD, and I'm happy to lend it out for anybody who wants to look at it. We all make thousands of little righteous choices every day that lead up to the story we tell of our lives. And looking back over our lives, we will see the influences and the choices and the outcomes of our own personal documentary. Living into our principles is not sometimes easy. We are asked to affirm them. That could be the easy part. As when we read through the principles, when I read through the principles to someone who doesn't know about Unitarianism, and they will often say, oh, yeah, sure, that makes sense to me. Oh, that's good. Oh, I think that's true. Oh, yeah, good. And we too, we nod and think, yes, they're good. I can affirm those principles. But we know that we are called to do more than just think that affirmation, more than nod wisely. The principles are actually deeply demanding. And feeling a little challenged by them is not a bad thing. In the 2009 edition of the UU World Magazine, the extraordinary and oftentimes very funny Meg Barnhouse says this about the seven principles. My experience of the principles is that they are deeply demanding. The first one asks me to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, which means that I can no longer subscribe to the cheerful Calvinistic doctrine of the total depravity of human nature. It sounds grim, she says, but really, if you are in fact starting with a total depraved nature, the opportunities for self-congratulation abound. Hey, I didn't knock over the 7-Eleven last night. Even though money's pretty tight, I'm doing really well. Now, I have a struggle with the worth and dignity of people who do unspeakable, awful things, she says. Whereas the doctrine of total depravity made that one a no-brainer. I'm supposed to value the democratic process, hearing the voice of everyone equally, allowing everyone to have their say. UU principles are demanding enough to make me whine, she says. For those of you who feel that the principles are thin gruel, I have a suggestion. Let's stick something onto the end of every principle that will stop people from smiling and nodding comfortably as they read. How about attaching beginning in our homes and congregations? Then we'd be faced with affirming things like the goal of world community is peace, liberty, and justice for all. Beginning in our homes and congregations. I thank Meg for that suggestion. And if we continue with her idea, then when we read the first principle, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, beginning in our homes and congregations. When we read the second principle, we affirm justice, equity, and compassion, beginning in our homes and congregations. It reduces not the height of that ideal, but reduces the ideal to an immediate and livable inspiration or challenge. This is important right now. The world needs this right now. A door has been opened that is allowing hate out into the streets, into the universities, the workplaces, not to mention social media. Hate towards a specific people, Jews, Muslims, indigenous people, gays, lesbians, or simply hate, anger, rage spewed out in parking lots and four-way stops. Last month, on the streets of Edmonton, last week, the University of Victoria, every day, somewhere in our neighborhoods, from New Westminster to Port Coquitlam, hate is finding its voice in our communities when not so long ago, it was uninvited. It's happening now. The world needs us to act on our principles in our homes, in our congregations, and in our communities, and towards ourselves. This is not a reduction of the principles. It is a valid and necessary starting place. I invite you now to sit quietly with your feelings and thoughts around these words for 2 minutes. Choose to bless the world. Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse this world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question: what will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless this world. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, anathematization, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting that which is sacred will not be defiled. Those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude to search for the sources of power and grace, native wisdom, healing, and liberation. More, the choice will draw you into community. The endeavor shared, the heritage passed on, the companionship of struggle, the importance of keeping faith the life of ritual and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of earth, the chorus of life welcome you. None of us alone can save the world. Together, that is another possibility waiting. We have a song called The Fire of Commitment. Its number is 1028.